who's going to do what or what you would like to do, but there's many of those things. All right. Now, I see that there are not a lot of youth. I see that there are a few. But I'm going to ask those youth that went to Canada to come forward. And if you would like to come also, you were there, right? Why don't you come up also? Who else was there? Pastor Dale was there, right?
Pardon?
Were you in Canada?
I sure was.
Well, you come on up too. I have questions for y'all. So something that, and you like to celebrate the past. You don't have to worship the past, but you can celebrate it. One of the things that I thought was always cool about Agape was that we send our youth out into the mission field. From the time I began at Agape in 1984, it seemed that we always sent youth out. And it always seemed to be something special. So my question is to you all, how did you see God work?
Why don't you facilitate the mic here?
Oh, okay. Thanks for responding.
Put me right on the spot, why don't you? Well, for me, kind of like I guess when I talked about what I thought would happen before we went, I saw God work the most in my own life, in my own worldview when I went out. For a long time, I've kind of been of a mindset of, yeah, it's good to help people, we definitely want to, but you can't save the whole world. That's just how it is. I mean, everything's messed up. But being there and interacting with the people, it gave me a sense of, like, hope to see, like, the community, how everyone was working together, the love and the bonds between the people there. It really affected me, because that's not something I see as much around here. And it kind of put in my mindset, well, we might not be able to save the world as a whole, we can save someone's world with God's help, some individual. We can change someone's life. So.
Nice words. Anna, would you like to add on to that? Just pass it right down the aisle.
Well, for me, it's kind of like the same thing that Stephen said, but I kind of thought, like, yeah, like a missions trip, like we can help people and stuff and have something to look forward to, but not for, like, the reasons that, for the stuff that we did, at least. Like, I kind of just thought, oh, like in life in general, you just kind of pay bills and, you know, live. But, like, that showed me you can really, like, look forward to stuff and, like, help other people, and the world's not, like, I don't know, terrible.
In the downtown city of Toronto, we did a walk with a guy that was helping in a men's shelter. And as we walked around, I did feel the presence of the Lord because I saw the different sides of people and the diversity of just a few blocks. So when I felt the Lord, I saw the good in people. And when I felt the Lord, I could see the difference between the people. And seeing that in the community, where in different aspects you can see the different parts of someone's life without assuming, without judging, that's where I felt the Lord.
When I felt the Lord when we went to the, what was the shelter that we went to? We went to a place for people that, I don't know how, what it's called. Certain disabilities, mentally or physically, went and spent their day. I felt the Lord presence there because even though they had these disabilities, they were still caring to help wherever they could. They were nice to all of us, wouldn't you say, in my group. And it really was heartwarming because you got to meet people that you didn't think would act that way. You thought they wouldn't like really want to talk to you or something like that. They would just mind their own business. But no, they wanted to get to know you and stuff, which was very heartwarming because when you go into it, you think you're like, oh, I'm going to sit here waiting for somebody or try to go around and make friends. But it actually went the other way. People wanted to be friends with me, and I couldn't get around to every single person who wanted to be. So that's where I saw the Lord in his presence and work.
Well, for me, it was a lot different. I'm a lot older. So, I mean, all those things did happen. We had a, you know, God was working everywhere, let me tell you, in everyone's heart and mind. I won't go into any specifics because some of that's private, but just God was working everywhere. He showed me that I can't do this anymore. I'm too old. Nobody said anything, but, you know, I made the best of things, but...
You're going to go last?
Okay, my daughter tells me that she's going to go last. When Erica was talking about the presence of God, we were being walked around downtown Toronto by a missionary. His name was EJ. If those of you followed my blogs, the blogs are still there. You just go to our website and you can link onto the blogs. You saw my perception of things that were happening. But EJ said that he is the only ordained person in downtown Toronto that lives in downtown Toronto. Can you imagine that? And the Toronto area is 25% of the Canadian population. It is the third largest city in North America. So it really was amazing. And he is, he kind of has a relationship with all the shelters, and he's just grassroots dealing with people who are homeless. So when Erica talks about the presence of the Holy Spirit, it was EJ and the anointing that God had on him through Jesus Christ. It was really amazing. And I don't know what else to say. I'll take away from the kids. So I don't, you know, if you want to see my perception of things, you can still go see my blogs. And that was a little bit hard to do, write blogs when you're like going to bed at 11 o'clock at night and getting up at 6 in the morning. And anyway. So, daughter, are you ready?
No. You're on your own.
Well, I don't like public speaking.
I walk here to this.
Just explain new.
I won't explain what?
New.
Oh. You explain it.
I don't want to.
Come on, Steve.
Is this valuable for the congregation? I think it is.
It's nice to know somebody else.
Oh, yeah, we got detained at the border.
I blame Steve.
And we waited there for about, let's see, and like 1 hour, 2 hours. And he had our phones in a big bag in the car. So, I don't know who
speaks.
I have more questions, so.
Enough of that. So, if there's one thing that you could bring back to Williamsport, is there one thing that you could bring back and say, hey, God gave me this gift that I want to share with the Williamsport community.
Yeah,
yes. What would that be? Community. I like it. Why would you say community?
Because
You know how we do it. So.
I'd say community probably because, like, we don't really have that as strongly here, and we don't see it, like, at least I don't see it, like, at all as much, and I want to bring that back and
okay.
spread that.
Good. Anybody else?
Well, like, going along with what she said, like, at first you might think it was just among, like, the church members or the people in the organization we worked with. And it was very strongly. But I think even more than that, even throughout the whole community, just people we were meeting, it was just a very strong sense of, like, kindness, and, like, immediately you connected with them. And I really just can't put it into words how astounding, like, the feeling was for me. Like, it's not something I've ever really felt here. And it was just amazing.
And if I can say, that's surprising. Canadians are not very friendly. I mean, I go there a lot, and they're not a friendly group of people, so I find that astonishing. Good.
Partnership, because in Toronto, they were very friendly to us, and they were very welcoming. And we felt at home, even when we weren't at home. So when we come back to Williamsport, everything seems like to be a competition. The schools and different, like, ethnicities and races, each has their own part because we feel as if we can't connect with each other, so we don't. So in Toronto, I would bring back partnership. And as she said, community, because as a whole, we're better than apart.
I would say the culture. I would bring back the culture because we have a lot of culture here, especially since we have Little League here and people come from all around the world to come see it. But up in Toronto, as Pastor Dale said, there's only 25% of Canadians in Toronto. The rest is different cultures. So, like, if we could bring back, like, culture to here and, like, have a bunch of people around the world, even though we're in only a small city, that would be great because you get to experience new things, new people, new types of things you could ever do that you can't really do when you only have one or two or three cultures.
What they're talking about is there was so many different people from all over the world. I mean, we think in the United States that we're diverse, but they were all right there. I mean, in one city. And they all wanted to know us. They were open. They fed us. We had all kinds of different food. Yeah. I mean, yeah. I mean, talk about open arms. Open arms.
It
might be being recorded.
Like, just shortly, like, continue on with that. I give you an idea. The first day I was there, the first day we worked with anyone, very obviously I was expecting to meet people speaking English. Right, of course. And, yeah, French, that was kind of expected, too. I mean, it's Canada. But the first day I met people speaking English, French, Spanish, Arabic, and Japanese, all within one day, like, in our little group. And there wasn't, like, 40,000 people in our group. There was maybe 20 people in our group. And all those different languages were spoken fluently by people in it. It was just amazing to see.
I don't have anything to say. It was a nice trip.
Okay. Well, is there anything else that you would like to share? I mean, okay.
I do not recommend sleeping on the floor.
So you saw God work, and would you do this again?
Yes.
Okay. All right. Would you recommend it for other people?
1,000%.
Okay.
Spider eggs in the hallways that we've had.
Okay. All right. Well, sure.
Oh, I want to say something from our little congregation to you guys. You guys going out
is an encouragement to us. You going encouraged us, and I want to see you guys do more things together.
Yes, Barbie. Oh, great question.
Because there are a lot of needs here, right? And it's more social
media. While we were there, we actually somewhat had this conversation about this topic with Matt Fox. This is one night I know a couple of us approached him, and we were just having a really deep talk about a lot of stuff with him. And he kind of asked us this question. And basically what we came to the conclusion of is, all of us pretty much have talked on one level or not about the whole sense of community and society that we felt. And what we ended up like coming to us as the young people and the next generation that are going to live here probably have to be the ones that are the foremost at bringing that community together. We have to be the ones who are making an effort, whether it be just among ourselves and our other peers, or if it be telling mom and dad, hey, we're going to have a barbecue over here at a friend's house, and a bunch of families are coming. Do you want to come? We're going to think about raising some funds for this friend we made who needs some money because something happened to their house or something, whatever. We have to be the ones that take charge. We just can't be waiting for someone to give us an opportunity to go on a mission trip. We have to be the ones that take the first steps.
Yeah, that's a great comment, because you were thrusted in a situation, and you had to do it, or you would kind of... You know, who's that dude? So you're right. You are the ones that have to motivate others to do this. Yeah, go ahead.
Kind of to go off of that, like, how we have to be the ones to, like, take the first step. That actually happened, but not, like, when we chose to, but it kind of showed me, at least, that it's not as bad as you think. Like, the first day, we went to New Booth, like that one place that Austin was talking about. All of us were like terrified because we had no idea what to expect. Like even Matt was like, oh, like I'm kind of nervous too. Like we had no idea what to expect, but like it turned out to be like one of the greatest things ever. Like you like kind of learned not to fear that type of thing.
I have to say, because me, Stephen, and Isaac, well, no, I'm talking about something else. So, well, Steven and Isaac aren't in Boy Scouts anymore, but I still am. So, like, service projects, like, they're there. They're always there. Like, when you asked about what can we do in the community, for, like, an Eagle Scout project or service projects, you go around, clean stuff up. You can just do that on a regular basis. There's somebody, house needs painted, but they are painting it by themselves, and you go around and ask the neighborhood, because I mow lawns for my neighborhood a lot for free because they don't have the mower or anything. We painted houses. I'm not sure of any shelters really around here that I know of. I did know there was one, but I'm not sure if it's still there anymore. And you could go visit that or something, set something up. You could do pretty much everything we did there, here. You just have to be willing to find it.
As he said about being willing to find it, what I learned is that we shouldn't have to be asked. We should have open hearts and minds and just do it. Don't complain. Don't tell yourself that it's too much work. But just doing it will bring so much more cause and happiness, not just to you, but to the other people. And if you have to be asked to do something, that means that you're not very willing to do it in the first place.
Maybe you're not seeing it.
Yeah.
Okay.
Hey, Brian, could you turn my mic on?
Okay. So I think probably we could fulcrum this morning into a conversation. So you've heard a little bit of some, you know, the kids are sharing things and you're trying to figure out exactly what happened by their, what they're talking about. So let me fill in a couple details. This might be a good bridge for us to pray, kind of to use this to launch some prayers for us. So the first thing that both teams, we divided up into two teams, the first thing that both teams did was we engaged in a community program. So, and I probably won't tell the story exactly right, but Pastor Bill, who had been there for 13 years, was in crisis because he came to this church, and the church had been in downtown Toronto, and around 1960, they said, you know what, this is getting too urban for us, so let's move to the outskirts of Toronto so that we can be in the suburbs, a safer place. Well, that safer place lasted for about 30 years, and then all of a sudden it was urban Toronto. So Pastor Bill came there and talked about being missional. Now, that's a new term. He probably didn't use the word missional, but we need to reach the community. And his leadership team constantly challenge him. Well, we can either be a mission or we can be a church, because you can't be both. So at about 11 years ago, they had a crisis. And that crisis was that in their area, which includes gangs, there had been on Saturday night a party that went late into the night, and when there's loud music, it gathers all the people from the area and all ages. Well, it just so happens in the backyard of these people who were having a party, which happened to be across the street from the church, the two gangs kind of flared up and they drew guns. Now, what happened was that a stray bullet, I don't know that any of the gang members got hurt, but a stray bullet hit a little 11-year-old boy that was sitting on a fence and killed him. So when the people came to church in the morning, all the street was yellow tape and blocked off and police cars all over the place. And so when Pastor Bill came in to the church, basically, he knew that this was not going to be a normal morning, because everybody's going to be asking what's going on. Everybody's going to be thinking about what's going on. And he tried to make it a normal Sunday morning service, but realized he really couldn't. So somebody slipped him a note in the middle of the service and said, or at the beginning of the service, and said, we should have this service outside. And he was fairly new, so he didn't really know that he could actually do this without getting in trouble, and that's a little bit of my pastor kind of paraphrasing what his story. But he felt it was a confirmation, because when they came towards the end of the service, he said, I think we should just go outside and pray. So the whole congregation went outside and held hands. But what was miraculous was that all of a sudden people from the community came over and joined them. And they held hands and prayed. And that brought a culmination to some time of tug and war. And within a very short period of time, they decided that, well, we need to be community focused. And so when the kids were kind of sharing being involved with the community, what they did was they said, well, how are we going to do this? So what are the needs of our community? Well, at that point in time, so
like 8 years ago. I mean, I'm not sure how this all transpired, but this one program that we'd been involved in had been going for 8 years. But they went in the community, they said, what are your needs? And so one of the first things they came up with is, well, we can help elevate the neighborhood by helping people paint their houses. So they figured they'd go around and they'd get a few houses to paint. And they could probably, you know, finish that in a year. We were actually the first group to do the second phase of what they envisioned 8 years earlier, because they had so many people saying they wanted their houses to be painted. They painted over 200 houses, and they just this summer finished what they started years ago with painting people's houses, and started doing other community things like helping the elderly. And he made a list of things that they were going to do, but they had this list for like 8 years. They couldn't get to the list. And we had list number one. Number one under phase two. And this was a situation. And so, guys, what I'm going to do is I'm going to talk about that ministry, and then you guys can share something about it. Then I'll talk about the special needs ministry, and then you guys can share something about it, and then we'll worship and have the offering, and we'll be done this morning. How does that sound? So, phase two, we happen to be involved in a project of painting apartment hallways. So if you read my blog, you kind of got a taste of this. About 3 years ago, 3 to 4 years ago, people from this apartment complex, so I'd only know how to talk about this in terms of what I know. So in California, you have like housing projects, like they have so many acres and all the houses are similar or the same. Well, this happens to be in a apartment complex. A lot of different apartments, all one story, all like rectangles, long rectangles. And there are many of them, different sizes and shapes, but there's a big complex. And in the complex, they applied for money so they could paint their hallways. So they applied for it. They got it from the city of Toronto. They got all this money. The money was given to the landlord so they could paint their hallways, and the landlord took the money and chose his color, and he did paint the hallways. But they hated him for it because it was ugly. So there's a rift between all these people and their apartments where they live and the landlord. So basically what went to the top of the list was, number one was that we want to paint these hallways. Have you ever had something like that? It's like you walk every day, you see this, and it's like you just have animosity towards someone who did something to you. So their number one project in phase two was to start painting a color that the people liked in the hallways. And that even got changed the very first day. Like, you guys didn't even paint because they changed the color. And it had to, you know, the owner had to approve it and the people had to approve. So we finally got the color. We painted hallways. We painted five hallways. Pardon?
What was the color? I can bring my shoe. It has paint.
Iska says she can bring her shoe. It has paint on it. Yeah, it was a blue. It was a bluish color. Any you guys want to make any comments about painting or any of that? So that's where we got involved in the community. And they gave us lunch every day. They people from around the apartment complex brought in food and gathered us together, and we ate with them. Any comments about the story or the working on the painting? Any other comments on the painting working with the community. So, the church got involved with the community. Now, let me tell you what the church looked like. When you went, when you walked into the door from the park, the main door, right from their parking lot, when you went through the door, it was messy. Buckets of paint, buckets with paint brushes in it, and I mean, it was messy, and it was not appealing. And you smelled it. And now just a couple of comments with that. This just reminded me of that, because if you go out back, they cleaned their paintbrushes out back. So there was a brick church, and if you stood on the sidewalk, and they had a large lawn, and you looked at the church, there was one part of the church wall that was like plastered with white paint. Because they're cleaning it and it's spraying. I mean, they're putting stuff up again. All these, everything we used was cleaned every day and reused. I don't know how old it was, but pretty much they like sprayed it off and it would get all over the church. So it was not, I mean, this is the back of the church, but this is where what you would see from the road. So this beautiful church and then one whole wall kind of like splatter full of white, grayish paint. Yeah, they got a little crazy when they were cleaning the paintbrushes and stuff. And yeah, and they needed to change their clothes afterwards. That's about the best I can say about that. Bill, you want to hand the mic? So any other comments about that? Now, one thing that happened was that when they saw the urban area coming into the church, they decided they're going to make their place a safe church. So what they did was they built 8-foot fences all around the property. 8-foot chain link fences all around the property. So if you walked in that community and walked down the sidewalk and it was on a corner, you would have seen the church through little squares. Think about how inviting that is. So one of Bill's first jobs was to try to get, my wife will say I say this wrong, rid of some of the fence. Part of it was still there around the parking lot, but all the part that went to the community was all taken down. So that was one. Any other thoughts about that? Painting?
Well, just kind of what that, like the statement about the fence and all that, about how they have to be like open to the community. What that made me think about was the fact that once again, just we worked through the morning and part of the afternoon, but then we came back to the church in the late afternoon and the evening. And what I just always found interesting was from pretty much the beginning of the morning to like the end of the day, there was people in that church who I had no idea who they were. There was a bunch of kids. There was a basketball court in there, and there was constantly kids in there playing basketball. Like every single day, there was just kids in there using the resources that the church has open to them. And on the barbecue night, there was so many people there. I mean, there was people that we worked with and like the teams throughout the week and people from the church, but there was also people from the community showed up. And I mean, I don't know if we would have the same amount of people who would show up if we did that here, because we don't have the same outreach. And it's a shame.
I was going to talk about lunch during painting, because the people we worked with made painting actually enjoyable, and I didn't know that was actually possible. There was one phrase that stuck through the whole week, and that is Johnny Stop. And if you don't know what that's from, there was a rap battle during the thing, and I was a part of it, but I didn't rap, I beatboxed. So during this, the one person, I still can't pronounce his name right, Stefan, always began his rap, because it was between Johnny and Stefan, and it always began with Johnny or Johnny Stop. It always began with it.
I know they were really bad at rapping.
It was just a fun experience, and during painting, they were making a bunch of jokes and stuff, and it was enjoyable.
While we were painting, each of us, since we were like such a small group, the people who work there who normally do that weren't used to that, like having such a small team. We each got paired with, like, I don't know, someone else to paint with. One of the workers, yeah. Which was really interesting because, like, you just talk to the same person that you, like, just met for, how many hours? Well, 2 days technically, but like 6 hours a day. And that was really interesting, like, hearing different stories and stuff, because we switched people and then we kind of just like stopped by like other people. Like I talked to the person who Steven was with and like Iska, like it was just really interesting.
Yeah, the way they talked to us, it seemed like we had known them for like years.
Like we were friends for.
Yeah, as if we were like, we had known them our whole entire life. That like the second that we sat down to eat,
they mentioned the person I was partnered with. His name was Johnny. and you have to understand, he was absolutely hilarious. I mean, I loved working with the guy. We were constantly joking back and forth, him, me, and everyone else who was around us. It was great. But at the same time, the one day when it was more just me and him back towards the end of the hall painting, he and I ended up talking about how he came to Christ, and he told me his testimony. And, I mean, like I said, we were constantly joking, but he just got really serious, and he was talking. And his, like, the outreach program there is what brought him to Christ. And he wasn't living a terrible life or anything, but it brought a major change around in him. I mean, he had took a vow of sobriety, which before he definitely hadn't been living that lifestyle. And it was just really interesting to me to see that major change and to see someone who was still very funny and fun-loving, but at the same time, he was very serious about his relationship and his commitment to Christ.
Okay, so that's painting. Now, what's really interesting about that is, so with every group, they're talking about people who are volunteering their time for that full day. And there are at least 6 or 7 people that were on any specific day that were there to paint people's apartment buildings and to be part of this refresh program. Can you imagine that? I mean, some of them had jobs, but there were certain days they were taken off so they could be part of this program. Really a cool experience. That does bring me up. So I got in trouble the first day because when they showed us this hallway, you know, so there's this long hallway, and I'm thinking to myself, okay, they start everybody at the end. I'm going, okay, well, I can help do this faster if I go to the far end and I start, start working on the woodwork. So I got chastised like right away. Oh, you don't want to relate to anybody? I mean, so I kind of got chastised. I go, oh man, okay, this isn't about just getting a job done. This is about also having a relationship. So that was kind of the Pastor Dale stuff, getting in.
Is it on? Yeah, it's on. They had a saying there that was, how did I know? It's not about the pain, but it's about the pain. But it's not about the pain. They repetitively throughout the week were telling us that saying, because it's the whole program, it wasn't about the pain. It's about us learning, us growing, and working with the community and making relationships. But at the same time, it is about the paint. We have to do a good job. But we shouldn't lose sight of the more important things while we're doing that.
No, difficult part, just to end this whole part about the paint. So obviously when you get other people coming in, and our group was small so that they could kind of control us better and make us do a better job. But if you have a group that's like 6 times just us, which they had groups like the week before, they had 60 people. You can't really control exactly what the quality is. So what they do is they have you do most of the work, and then these guys go back, they kind of send you out to create some space, and they like fix everything that, all the detail, they fix all the stuff that you mess up, or the hard detail, they finish in all the, I mean, it is really amazing. And a couple times I walked in the hallway when they were doing this, and they were just, having a good old time, great conversations, joking with each other, but still getting all this detail work done. That is something that, I was just amazed at, because I would have to be so focused. Okay, I got to get this right. So really quite an experience. The second thing is that we both had an experience with special needs. Now, as Ginny can tell you, our group, their group, as they talked about New Booth, that was a higher functioning level of special needs. So they were pretty much able to do many things, walk around, go to a park. They were higher functioning. Our group had 2 days with special needs that were really special needs. In other words, there was a full gamut of what, I mean, some people could just sit in their wheelchair. Others like roved around, and we had people with, you know, that kind of, they had, what would you say, there were certain things they did vocally or with their bodies that was like over and over and over again. So it was very hard to relate to them, but it was interesting because they would just gravitate to you and you would find a way to interact. I don't know if you guys want to tell another New Booth story, but I will tell one story. We had one guy who, he would go up to you in his wheelchair. He'd wheel himself over, and then he'd ask you if you had jumper cables. And he'd have the same conversation over and over with you. So he'd come back another hour later, and he'd ask you the same thing. Do you have a son? Do you have a daughter? That's what, I don't know if they asked them that. He may have. But you would talk to him, and then 5 minutes later, he'd ask you the same questions over and over again. Well, what we did is we did a show and tell. Did you want to say something about that, Erica?
When we were at St. Jude's, which is where Dale, Ginny, and I were, Ben, Mia, and Stevie, we did a lot of different activities with them. And seeing them interact was very interesting because they could understand each other even when sometimes we couldn't. So, like Matt, which is the guy that was in the wheelchair that asked if you had booster cables, he would ask for your phone to see if you could take pictures with him. He would ask if you had booster cables because he was worried about your safety. He would ask if you had any family, brothers, sisters, daughters, sons, because he wanted to understand your lifestyle, but at the same time, we wanted to understand his too. And by him asking those questions, we got to see a lot from that specific person because of how he interacted. And it was very, very fun and very interesting to see as a tiny group in a bigger group of people that we maybe couldn't understand at all times, but we could interact with them like they were human beings.
Mm-hmm. Well, we, on the second day we had karaoke. Oh my gosh, karaoke. They did the karaoke. Well, you can imagine. They were like really loud. Really loud. But we had such a good time doing that with them. And then we did a little bit of karaoke too.
For karaoke. Any special needs person that could audibly sing and was able to do it, if it wasn't well or not, didn't matter. But if they could do it, then they did. Every person did it. And then they invited us to sing. And me and Mia sang You Belong With Me by Taylor Swift first. And if Ben were here right now, he would tell you that he did not sing, but he did. He will tell you that he did not sing and that we're making this up, but
we got him up to sing with us, and we sang Party in the USA by Miley Cyrus in front of them. And their reactions and their love and their compassion, just to hear us interact and do what they were doing, was so enlightening and so moving, because you can't be nervous around people that can't and will not judge you. And doing that with Mia and with Ben, with both songs, and having them sing karaoke, we were all dancing, we were singing along. The first person who sang, they sang Perfect by Ed Sheeran. And Ben and Stevie and me and Mia were sitting on the couch, and we were dancing and we were singing along and we were having fun. So being able to have those emotions with people that you have met only twice is so exciting because of the passion that they shared with you, and it wasn't one-sided, and you could feel it. You could feel the presence of God. You can feel the presence of their emotions. And having to do the different crafts and the different activities was, I can't even explain it. It was so, so, so much fun.
Personally, I have two stories from being at Nubu that really are important to me, really, that resounded with me. What? Is it another place? It's a different location with people who more, they might have a hard time talking or something like that, but they're less severely handicapped than the people at the other place were. So we were able to do more physical activities with them. But I mean, I'll admit it, I was still very much nervous, still very much afraid going in there. I mean, for me, I can be shy just talking with normal people when it comes to that. So going into this, being thrown into this situation, for me, it was very nerve-wracking. So we go in there the first year. What? Not with you guys, I know all of you. The first day we went in, like I said, I was nervous. And immediately when we went in, one of the ladies who worked there, she told us, Michael and I believe, about a gentleman who came in every single day. He plays Monopoly. It doesn't matter if he's been playing it for 2 weeks straight. Every single day he goes in there, he will play Monopoly at least once. And she recommended that we play a game of Monopoly with him. So, I mean, like I said, I was scared. Immediately I latched onto that idea. I'm like, all right, I'm going to find this guy, and I'm going to play some Monopoly. I can do that. I know it. So we went, and we played. And I actually ended up talking to this guy, and I found myself very quickly going into a conversation with him. I found at one point, I just kind of came to the realization, I'm not nervous anymore. I mean, I have nothing to be afraid of here. And I looked up from the game, I looked behind me. Everyone else in the group is like on the other side of, it was in like a big warehouse almost style building, so it was like a floor spread out. Everyone else was on like the other side of a floor playing like hockey with some dude. I mean, I guess it's Canada, so that makes sense. And I was just like, okay, I guess we're all doing things. And it was just amazing, because I did see how scared some of them were as well. It wasn't just me. How everyone had fit in so quickly, it just happened. And it was just amazing to me how that fear was alleviated. And the second story is on, it was the first day. It was during a break, because we had breaks every once so often. So we were out in the more commons type room, and there was a pool table. And Mike and I were out there, and we were playing pool, and we were talking. And all of a sudden, an elderly woman walks by, and Mike turns around, and he starts talking to her. To my utter surprise, it's in another language. It was an older Filipino woman, and he asked her in Filipino, are you Filipino? And she turns, very surprised, and responds to him in the same language. And they started talking, and it was just fascinating. She's been in the area for a long time, but there's no other Filipinos around there, really. There's some occasionally, but there wasn't anyone for her to talk to. So that day and the next day, Mike went and talked to her very long periods of time about everything in her life, about her struggle with having no one to talk to, with her cigarette addiction, at everything. Like, they just talked. He told her all about his life. I ended up getting to talk to her some as well, and that was amazing. They ended up teaching me some of the words from Filipino. There's a ceremony, not a ceremony, but a gesture of respect when you're meeting an older woman. Maybe not 2 hours, but we were definitely there for quite some time. And part of it was, because she was an elderly woman in a position of respect, we had to refer to her as Tita, which was aunt, I believe was the meaning. And I don't know, it was just amazing to see that connection. I know he has like her contact information, so he really wanted to keep in contact with her. And just hearing his passion when he was speaking about meeting her, it was just astounding.
I want to add on to that. As he said, like, we had to call her Tito and stuff like that. Or did I say that wrong?
Tita.
Tita. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah, I got a nickname throughout the week. Yeah, Tita. We had to call her that. Mike made us, me and Steven, look like fools. We'll add on to that. You're supposed to put her hand to your forehead like this. But what we didn't know is that he told us that we had to get on one knee. But actually, we didn't. We could have just bent over and did it. Yeah. So he made a fool out of both of us because we had no idea.
We had no idea, but
God. It's like, so afterwards we talked to Mike and it's like, yeah, he made a fool. He said to me and Steven, yeah, I made a fool out of both of you. I was like, I knew it. Me and him both said, right, I knew it. So anyway, my story is, well, I have two stories. One is a ping pong story, and a air hockey story. Well, not air hockey, it was field hockey. And this one guy, he was an older gentleman. He was an older gentleman. He played field hockey every single day he came, apparently. And he used to play actual hockey. And so it was me, Steven, Matt, and Mike. Oh, yeah, you were playing, but I'm talking about after you were done playing. Okay, anyway, Iska was reffing at that point because her leg hurt, I'm pretty sure.
No, I just wanted to videotape.
Okay, anyway, so we were playing. So it was Matt, Mike, and Steven on a team. Steven's goalie. Then it was me, this old... Well, I'm talking after you're done. After, then it was... I was the goalie. This older gentleman was the, was on my team, and, oh, who else was there? Oh, and Anna was there, and Anna was playing. So, this guy put a lot of passion in this game. Like, none of us could beat him. We couldn't. Like, Steven and me, I wasn't good at the game whatsoever. Like, I hit it towards the goal, and it shot 40 feet past the goal. I was nowhere good. But he hit every shot. He was closer to the goal than all of us. So that was nice. Then we got to meet him. We sat down. I sat down with him, with Matt, for 40 minutes and talked to him the first day. And then the second day, I talked to him for more. And you just get the loving passion that people get, even though they have disabilities. This person's disability was he hit his head when he played hockey, and he sees things that aren't there, and it puts him into shock. So when he's, like, dehydrated and stuff, that's really when it comes into play. So that's why he's always inside. So him playing field hockey and able to get over or overcome that problem? Because he said, even to me, when he started playing, he stopped because he started hallucinating and seeing stuff because he was sweating and stuff like that. It was really cold in there, but still, you worked up a sweat when you're running back and forth. So that was the disability, and I just got to know him, and it was great. We sat down every time, and the second one was a basketball story, and this person who only played basketball twice in his life was better than me, and I played basketball for my other church for 4 years, and I was bad. It was just bad.
You would throw it underhand.
Yeah, because I was just bored at that point because I couldn't make anything anyways. So he was about Erica's height, and he could jump higher than what I can reach without jumping. And I'm like, how? I can't jump more than like an inch off the ground, let alone 2 feet. So he was amazing, and afterwards we sat down and we were playing ping pong afterwards, and me and him were just talking why we were hitting ping pong back and forth. It didn't really matter. We weren't keeping score or anything. And we just talked, and it... How long was I over there, Stephen? Yeah, Weibel? Yeah, I was over there for quite... Well, I don't think any of us were keeping track of a time. So... That's that. So, Anna, okay, did you? Who won?
I won it. Dale, do you want to finish your story that you were telling about the jumper cables? No, I thought maybe you wanted to. But anyways, well, the jumper cables. The jumper cables. I mean, he was so obsessed about this jumper cable things. Well, Dale brought in some the day that we were show and tell. That's right, show and tell thing. And he didn't even know what they were. Did he?
Okay, so at New Booth, because I was in the same group as Steven, there's this, like, this story, like, it's kind of, it was all fun, but this, like, really tested your, like, patience. Because there's this one guy, like, he's a great guy, but he knows so many facts about literally everything in the world. And, like, I'm not kidding. This guy could talk for, like, 24 hours straight. And he's, and, like, it's kind of funny because we all kind of like passed him down because we, one person would like call us over to play like basketball like with Austin, but then that guy would be talking to Austin, but Austin wouldn't want to be like rude or anything, but like we all wanted to interact with everyone.
See, I'm a very patient person, and I'm not that rude. Hey, I'm not patient with you.
Wait,
difference.
What?
You did talk to that guy for probably the longest
time. Yeah, Austin. Austin did talk to him.
They sat there and were just talking about everything.
Yeah, and then like Matt would come over and he'd be like, oh, like I like baseball too. And then the guy would start talking to Matt for like 4 hours. Like it was like really interesting, yeah, just like how like we were all like far apart from each other, but at the same time we were kind of like linked somehow, yeah. Because like we'd have to like check up on each other, and it was really interesting.
After, because I was at New Booth too, the second day we were there, when we were going to leave, I wasn't expecting this, but they gathered everybody who was there and had them sit in like the cafeteria area. They brought out a microphone and we sat at a table, and they had like almost pretty much everybody who could like speak like in front of people. They had them, they came up and they all individually like thanked us for coming, and yeah, and it was really sweet. I wasn't expecting it, and they like all thanked us for coming and stuff, and then they gave the microphones to us to say things. I can just tell you, I was trying to think the whole time about what to say, but I can tell you that like when I went there, I was extremely nervous. I didn't know what to expect because I don't know. When I think, I know this is horrible, but when, like, I have a stereotype. When I think of disabled people, I think of typically people who aren't able to communicate or, like, I mean, obviously they can communicate, but they're not very, like, they can't function to the point. Like, I played softball with a guy, and I was so scared to throw the ball to him because I didn't know if he would catch it, but he caught it a lot, but I kept overthrowing it by accident. But, like, he was really good, and I was just surprised because, I mean, I haven't played softball in a long time, and I kept overthrowing it or throwing it to the side or something too far, and he wouldn't dive, but, like, he would usually catch it a lot, and I was just surprised to see, like, how much they could function, and I kind of felt guilty for having that stereotype in my mind. But what I said to them was, like, I know that we had come there to serve them and to help them and interact with them. But when we came there, it kind of was the other way around. Like, they interacted with us. They came to us. And it wasn't us being a ministry to them, but in a way they were being a ministry to us.
I have a great question. Was it Mike or you that hit the softball?
I think what Iska just said, I think, is a good way to close, is that, you know, we are to serve, but in doing so, a lot of times we are on the receiving end also. And I'm glad that you guys took that away, that I hear passion from you and excitement and really a servant's heart. So I want to end this with, if anybody would like to come and pray with these kids, I'd like to open it up to prayer. Just, you know, a short prayer. And you guys can join in also. Okay? So if anybody would like to come, if not, just maybe the elders or anybody, the parents or anybody that would like to come. And if that's the whole congregation, that's fine. Yeah, why don't you guys stand up? Thank you. Anybody would like to start? And Pastor Holger, would you like to close? Okay. Sure, if you'd like to start.
Father God, I thank you for these young people and for the people that went with them. Lord, I ask that this would be the birth of a new thing. Lord, I ask that this would give birth to something new, that you would take and seal those that have gone and that you would bind them together and that you would grow them. And Creator God, you've put in each of these people's hearts a desire for you, and they've responded to it. We ask that they will now have courage to listen as you speak to them, to do the things that they think might not be possible, or at least might be difficult, but that they'll be courageous and encourage each other to be faithful, to be the love of God with their hands and with their feet and with their mouths.
Heavenly Father, I would thank you for these young people and the adults that went with them. And Father, I would just ask that you would not let this fire be quenched. I would pray that you continue to stir this in their hearts, this attitude of servantship. Lord, I would just pray that you keep that passion alive, you know, they see something, and I pray that maybe they can start something like this here in Williamsport. And I thank you for these children.
I thank you, Lord, for the attachment that was gained very quickly in Toronto, and I hope that it will be coming forth into our lives every day and into Williamsport and to any neighboring communities.
I thank you, Father, for the strength and the peace almost that you gave us throughout the trip, because we avoided, for the most part, any big difficulties that I was afraid of. And I also very strongly thank you for the moments where we felt your presence, because there were too many to mention in this talk we had right now, Lord. And I asked that you'll bring those moments, that you'll bring things like that back with us and through us to this city as well.
Thank you, Father, for sending these kids out, being with them, and showing them how they can interact with your people, how they can love those people with the love that you give them. Father, I ask that you will nurture this love in them, nurture this fire, that they will never in their life forget what they experienced there, that they will live that here and in the future, and not be shy to reach out to the community, to reach out to others. We pray all this in Jesus' mighty name. Amen.
And I thank you for playing along. And, you know, God has different ideas at times. And we just ran with what God gave us this morning. Would the ushers please come forward? Yes?
There's a new baby in the bucket.
Oh, yes. Thank you for reminding me. Would you like to share it since you brought it up?
I just know Fern's here.
Yes. Yeah, if you don't know, Fern Bishayigo is now part of our community.
Fern Alexandra Bishayigo was born at 9:30 yesterday morning.
Thank you for reminding. I was going to say that and I forgot. Yes, if you